Good morning, you're welcome to Galway Talks with me, John Morley. If you want to get a comment into us, you can do on our text and WhatsApp line. That's 086-3833-553. That is our text and WhatsApp number. Phone Siobhan on reception on 0917700077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. To some of your comments into us this morning, John, your speaker is a local election candidate. Ask him about local disability issues. Well, when the local election candidate brings to me about the Green Paper of Disability Reform and the Optional Protocol, which is not only a national but an international issue, I feel I'm in my rights to ask him about such issues as well. And another listener says, can someone in power please go into on post? It's absolutely crazy the way that employees are treated. Crates and crates of mail. One person has already been struggling, and at least more are on the verge of struggling as well. The powers that be changed the routes and loaded another 3 hours onto a lot of their duties. These people pay the union, but they will never do anything to help them. Can you please highlight this issue, please? And that comes in from one of our listeners as well. Now, though, I want to go on to a very controversial topic. It has been controversial for many years, but a new documentary came out last night on it, because in an exclusive interview with RTE Investigates, Barrister Marie O'Shea criticised a lack of action on many of the legislative recommendations contained in her report, and it's all to do with Ireland's abortion laws as well. And there's calls on government to prioritise ongoing issues with the legislation, as many women are fleeing this country and still leaving this country to access this service abroad. I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the programme today by Dr. Lorraine Grimes, who joins me in studio. Lorraine, good morning.
Good morning.
Talk to us about this documentary yesterday and the things it highlighted. It was quite damning.
Yeah, so the report by Mary O'Shea that was highlighted in the documentary, myself and Dr. Deirdre Duffy were involved in doing the research for that report. So it was great to see some of the findings highlighted in the documentary. And it, I suppose the main thing is it highlighted the fact that women are still travelling abroad, that they're falling outside the remit of the legislation here. And we got to hear from some of the women themselves who have had to travel and the impact that that has had from them, which I think was quite powerful. Mm. And as well as that, it also exposed the rogue agencies. So agencies who advertise as offering non-judgmental counselling. And we saw in the documentary last night that it's far from non-judgmental, actually. So it was quite interesting to see that as well.
Are there not laws in place to stop that? I know that people can canvass. You have to be a certain amount of distance away from a clinic to canvass. But if that's happening inside the walls of the building, you really don't stand a chance.
So the problem actually is that while we have a safety zone bill, so we do have the bill there, it's with the Shannon, but it's been delayed. And we don't actually have legislation stopping people from protesting outside of clinics. So we have seen protests in Galway outside of GP providers. And as well as that, so we don't have legislation to as you say, to, you know, I suppose, oversee these clinics and what they're offering. So we don't have legislation around that. That is a gap.
And what is holding up that bill in the Shannon, in your opinion? Is it opposition or what's holding it up?
Yeah, I think there's delay tactics going on in the Shannon, to be honest. It's there on the agenda. They never seem to have time to deal with it. I think that it's they're delay tactics by you know, senators who are against bringing this in, you know.
And how can that happen, though? Because we've seen government get a lot of legislation and different things through the two houses fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. Is there government senators also against this?
In fairness, I don't think it's government senators who are against it. There's just been a number of people who are very strongly pro-life in the Shannon. Mm. And they're in the position that they're able to hold this back. So we've been waiting on this. We were promised this, you know, shortly after we passed the legislation on the Health Act. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's 4 or 5 years later and we still haven't seen it. So it's delay tactics and it needs to be dealt with as soon as possible.
Because it was very controversial and emotive at the time of the repeal of the 8th referendum. The people spoke, they spoke overwhelmingly. And to see this not progress, even as just a Democrat, no matter what side of the fence you sit on, it's quite disappointing to see this.
It is disappointing, and I do think that, you know, people have the right to protest. I very strongly agree with that. But they don't need to protest right outside of a GP's clinic. You know, that doesn't need to happen. So I think that, you know, this legislation is very much wanted by many people. We have voted on this. You know, the people have spoken. So, yeah, I think this needs to be dealt with, along with the recommendations, of course, of Mary O'Shea's report as well.
And it's a continuation of shame that Irish women have felt for decades.
Yeah, there's still a lot of stigmatisation around abortion. So just because it's legislated and it's, you know, and it is available, it doesn't mean that stigma has gone. It's still very much there. And we do have 403 GP clinic contracts now. And we have 17 out of 19 maternity hospitals now providing. So that is very good. They are continuing to rise, but we do have a lot of conscientious objection as well. So I suppose the issue then is with inconsistent access around the country. So in the northwest, in places like Donegal, it's, you know, there's a very small number of providers in that area. So we do still have, you know, inconsistent access around the country. And it's not that a lot of GPs conscientiously object. It's actually, when I was speaking to GPs, a lot of them said, you know, we're overburdened at the moment. There's a shortage of GPs, there's a shortage of staff in hospitals, and that needs to be addressed, you know. It's not so much that they're against providing the service, they haven't opted in because they can't take more patients, it's the workload as well.
But we have huge medical health practices that have been built across the country, primary care centres, etc. Could they be used as a way of getting this out and make it more accessible to people in every county in Ireland? Or what solutions do you see yourself?
Absolutely. I think that would be really beneficial if we were to do that, because right now it's only available after 9 weeks in maternity hospitals. There's only 19 in the country, so that's making it, it's narrowing it down a lot. But I think if we were to broaden it out to primary care, it would be, I think, really beneficial to do that.
Okay. We've talked about that bill and the safety zones. We've talked about conscientious objection. We've talked about locations. What other barriers are causing women to go elsewhere in search of abortion services?
Yeah, so as we saw last night, you know, under Section 12, there is a 12-week cut-off point. And I suppose our interpretation of that legislation has been very, it's been very conservative. So as we saw with one of the women there last night, even though she had attempted a termination of pregnancy, it wasn't completed and therefore she had to travel abroad. So I think in those instances, there really should be a continuation of care, you know, for that woman to have to travel abroad even afterwards. You know, it just wasn't fair. As well as that, we saw was highlighted quite well was the legislation around fetal anomaly is being interpreted very very conservatively as well. So there's still many having to travel there. But also around Section 9 in terms of access to abortion on the grounds of mental health, it's very difficult to access under that that particular section of the Act. So we know that the numbers accessing it are very, very small under those grounds. And the pathway is still very unclear. So that's highlighted in the report that myself and Dr. Deirdre Duffy have worked on with Mary O'Shea. And the problem is that you need to be referred from a GP to a perinatal psychologist. And the problem is we only have 12 perinatal psychologists in the country. So it's more our interpretation of the legislation has been quite restrictive. And if we actually change policy, I think a lot could be done in the next few years. And I think if the Department of Health were to sit down and implement some of those recommendations, well, all of the recommendations from Mary O'Shea's report, a lot of these issues would be addressed.
Because during the time of the repeal of the 8th referendum, the change that was made there is that government can provide legislation to deal with abortion services. Is the roadblock, in the Senate, you mentioned there with the safety zones, does that apply to the other abortion legislation as well?
So that's to do with the Health Act, and they can implement changes in the Health Act. Actually, a lot of the recommendations in the report are changes in terms of policy, not actually the legislation. And I think, you know, a lot of the, you know, the TDs and even people around the country, we're tired of debating this. You know, we've done this, and we know what people want. We know we need to be in line with WHO standards. In some cases, we're not. So we need to start implementing these changes now. And a lot of the issues are actually policy. They're things like training, adequate resources, adequate staffing. Mm-hmm. They're all things that the HSE are, we're all aware of these. We have it there in black and white in the report now. It's about implementing and putting proper funding, ring fence funding behind this as well.
Okay. I know another area you're involved in is this solidarity with the women of Gaza. And I know there's a fundraising table quiz tonight. You might just talk to me a bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm in a women's collective. We're called Abortion Access Campaign West. And we decided to hold a fundraiser for the women of Gaza because we know that 2/3 of those killed so far have been women and children, and an average of 37 mothers have been killed every single day. There's only 2 hospitals which are providing maternity care now for about 60,000 women. So I suppose just to mention as well that the fact that miscarriage, stillbirth and perinatal death are really concerning at the moment in Gaza. So we decided to hold a fundraiser in the Oslo tonight at 7:30 p.m. It's a table quiz, and we have a big raffle as well with some fantastic prizes. And just thanks to all of the local businesses who have been so generous in their support behind this as well. We've been overwhelmed with the amount of prizes actually that we've gotten. So it's really, really great. And just everyone is welcome, and looking forward to seeing you there. If anyone would like to know more about it, they can go to, we're on Facebook and Twitter, and they can look up aacwest.wordpress.com.
And all funds, as you mentioned, they go to that medical aid for Palestinians. Doing great work on one of those NGOs.
Fantastic.
That's trying anyways to do some great work in Palestine and in that general region as well. I do know the Galway poet and novelist Elaine Feeney is going to be calling out the questions.
She is, we're delighted to have Elaine to support this as well. She's been fantastic around this issue as well.
Brilliant. Well, the very best of luck with that. Dr. Lorraine Grimes, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks this morning. We're sticking with the theme of women's issues today, because up next is SheRose, a Galway symposium which aims to promote women and diversity in politics. That's next. And a very good morning to you. Welcome into Galway Talks with me, John Morley. And we're looking at a lovely event now, because SheRose, there's a Galway symposium which aims to promote women and diversity in politics. And it's great to have in studio with us this morning Helen Ogbu, the coordinator of Sale Connect, and she's also a Labour candidate for Galway City East. We have Kathleen Law. And on the line, we have Dr. Helen Maher, the VP of Equality, Diversity and Inclusion at the University of Galway. Ladies, you're all very welcome onto the programme today. Helen, I'll start with you first, because you're the coordinator of Sale Connect. Talk to us about this symposium.
Thank you so much, John, for having me in the studio. The symposium SheRose is all about encouraging the participation of women and diversity in politics. We can tell, like, the percentage of women in politics, especially in Galway. If we look at the numbers, we have 5 women out of the 18 sitting councillors. So we feel that it's important to create awareness, to educate people and inform people about the importance of participating in politics. A lot of people are not aware that they can participate. A lot of people have disadvantages or are discouraged. So it's just to bring about people, like we have Dr. Helen Maher, who is the Vice President of EDI in the University of Galway. We have also sitting councillors who are from different parties. They will be coming and educating us on what it entails, what can we do? What are the challenges and how can we overcome them as well? And we have people from the Immigrant Council. We have the Political Participation Coordinator who will be coming to talk to us about the importance and the essence of participating in politics, especially for women and migrant population. Mm-hmm. So, and we have Doras as well, Tahira from Doras. So it's going to be a great event, a great symposium. And we are encouraging people to come and listen, to come and learn, to come and educate themselves on the importance and how to navigate the challenges of participating. Not only participating, we also have people who are not aware of how they go about registering and participating by voting in the local elections and in the coming elections. So it will be a great symposium. So we're reaching out to people. They should come and attend. It's very important. They will gain a lot from it.
I suppose there's a few strands for encouraging women in politics and tackling that disparity in the different councils and city and county councils as well. But part of that is on the political parties. And sometimes if people want to run as independent, it's up to women themselves to get that encouragement and get that confidence to run as an independent if they so choose to.
That's correct. And so we are also going to be talking about what do the parties need to learn? How did they bring in equality, diversity and inclusion in their policies? And that is where Dr. Helen Maher, who is very experienced and has wealth of knowledge in that area, will be speaking to the political parties. So this is not only for people who are interested in, for women and people who are interested in participating in politics, but also the political parties will have a lot to learn from it, and also the local government will have a lot to learn from it.
What do you see as the barriers for women getting involved in local politics?
Well, I think it's a lot. It's a lot. Women play a lot of diverse roles. We're not only participating in politics, we're also playing the role of mothers, we're playing the role of wives, we're also playing the roles of community leaders. So there is a lot, there's an additional disadvantage to women participating. Like, I am a woman, I am someone who is of migrant origin. I have experienced a lot of challenges. So if you talk about women, it's looking at women, but then looking at women who are from migrant origin. So there are different challenges that we face. And that is what, like, I'll be learning from the people that will be speaking on the day, because I'll be learning from like the likes of Councillor Hazel Chu, who was the former Lord Mayor of Galway City, Dublin City Council, and also Councillor Uremu Adejimi from Longford, and Elena Sekas as well from Limerick. So we'll be hearing from them what they'll be talking on are the challenges. We're also going to be looking at the impact of social media, because that's another huge impact on women. So women are really, really disadvantaged. And like, I'll be learning tomorrow, and other people are going to learn from that tomorrow, but there are huge advantages. We get less support, and we play different roles being a woman. So I don't know if Kathleen wants to add to that.
Yeah, Kathleen, what do you think?
Well, I suppose, you know, what Helen has, you know, put very clearly there is just some of the disadvantages facing women, and they've been, you know, with us for a very long time, and some strategies have been tried, like the introduction of gender quotas and so on, which have been successful to a certain extent. But I think, you know, on top of all that, you have another set of barriers faced by migrants in particular. And again, Tahira will be talking about that. Like, I'm really struck by the demographic change in Galway over the last number of years. Like, if you look now at the population, the latest census, we're about 11% of the population in Galway is non-Irish. And we rightly take great pride in our city, knowing there's so much diversity and how much people of non-Irish descent, you know, contribute to the culture and the vibrancy of the city. But if you look at the city council makeup, and this is not in any way to take from the really hard work the councillors are doing, but to the best of my knowledge, there isn't a single person on the city council who's of non-Irish descent, and you have only 5 women out of the 16. For all that, the people who are there work very hard. But clearly we would get a much richer city council, and a council that would probably be able to respond and react and develop policies that would be more suitable, if you like, more reflective of the entire population of the city. And I've been really struck myself, and I've had a very peripheral involvement with the Ards Family Resource Centre, where I've met such a diversity of people. As I say, my involvement is very small in that I just do some English language conversation classes there, but, you know, met people from Polish, Lithuanian, Algerian people, from Somalia, from Afghanistan, Congolese people, and a lot of Ukrainian people, obviously, in the last while. And I'm really conscious of, you know, that there's a certain amount of isolation goes with being a migrant here. Mm. And language is only part of it. You know, obviously, that's a huge disadvantage for work, for participation in community, for participation in politics, if you have any issues with language, and a lot of migrants would have. But I think apart from all that, you know, sometimes we who are sort of here all the time, we're not conscious that we're really part of a club that has a whole range of networks and experience, lived experience. And it's not that we're trying to exclude anybody, but sometimes it can actually be very hard for somebody to break into that club who doesn't have, you know, the family network, the cultural and social, the sporting connections and that. And I think as Helen, you know, she really has assembled an interesting panel of speakers, because you've got people like she mentioned, who you'll be talking to in a minute, Dr. Helen Maher, of the analysis, if you like, of the facts and figures and the policies, and people like Tahira Fabrizi from Doris, who's actively involved in helping migrants and, you know, find work, access education and so on. But I think it's also going to be really interesting to hear the lived experience of the people who've put themselves forward for election, and that whole process. How do you get selected? How do you get elected? How do you retain your seat? Which, of course, is a particularly relevant one for the local elections coming up. And also, just, I suppose, the nuts and bolts of politics for a lot of people. As I say, you have a nice mix, really, there of people who are very analytical, very active in pursuing policy objectives to make our politics more inclusive, and people who've actually, if you like, walked the walk. So I think it'll be, as Helen says, it'll be a really interesting day. And there'll also be great opportunities for input from people on the floor. It's not just the speakers. We're hoping that everybody who attends and who has something to say and contribute will share that knowledge with everybody.
And another question for you, Helen, and apologies if it's a generalisation and if it's crass as well, indeed, but women in politics and the lack of them, is there an element to it that women are a bit more sensible than men? We see a lot of very high-profile politicians leaving politics, the likes of Kieran Cannon of Fine Gael, saying the abuse is just something else. Is there an element that women are more in tune with their emotions and they're more sensible and haven't been going forward in the same numbers as men for that reason?
Well, that could be one of the reasons, but like women are easily attacked because the traditional expectations of women comes into play, and that is what we need to change. We need to understand that things have changed, and women are also capable of attaining and running for political positions. They are mothers in the home, they run the homes, and like, even if you look at the examples of women who have held political positions, even kind of globally, you would see that they did it very well. But we need more support. I think the attack needs to stop. There are loads of attack. There are loads of attacks, there are loads of abuse on women, but we need to be empowered. We need more encouragement, even from the men folk, from government. We need a lot of support. So it's seeing what is happening, then telling them, we are here to support you. And that's one of the things that we're going to take away from this, and that's one of the things that we're trying to pitch to women, that women, we know, we hear, we see the challenges that you're facing, we see the attacks, the abuse, but and listening to the lived experience of people who have navigated these challenges, on how they overcame the challenges, to kind of learn from them. So I think it's going to be something, but definitely women face challenges. There are loads of challenges that women are facing, and this is what we're trying to overcome, to find out what are the challenges and how do we overcome them. It's going to be a discussion, and we're going to hear from everyone as well.
And Kathleen, you want to come in there?
Well, just on that very thing of social media, I suppose the negative effects of social media are felt, you know, in all areas of life. Now, anybody who's any kind of a public figure, whether it's sporting, politics of whatever. But definitely, I think everybody will agree that the targeting of women is particularly brutal on social media. And then if you overlay that with the targeting of migrants, which we're seeing so much of now. So if you put that together, it's a really toxic mix. Yeah. But one of our speakers in particular, one of the councillors, is actually going to deal very specifically with that topic, how you handle social media, or what, maybe not, I don't know if it's how you handle it, because we need a lot of, you need a lot of legislation really to tackle that. Yeah. But we'll talk about her own experience and how she's navigated it.
I also want to bring into the conversation Dr. Helen Maher, the VP of Equality, Diversity and Inclusion at the University of Galway. Good morning, Dr. Helen. What have you made of what you've heard in this conversation this morning so far?
Look, I think it's really interesting and I really welcome the initiative. I think it's great leadership from Helen in terms of pushing forward the She Rose event, but the whole, I suppose, ethos and process around it, that it is around increasing that public visibility. It's about creating awareness and enhancing the debate around political representation. I mean, the evidence internationally is that we still have a long way to go. There's just under 27% of women in parliament internationally when measured across the globe. So that remains a key challenge for representation. And both Helen, I think, and Kathleen have referred to that, you know, the diversity of our population here, that we need to be more representative and reflective of that population. The importance of recognizing some of the barriers that prevent women from going in to the political arena, and that prevent ethnic minority communities as well. So enhancing that debate, learning from the experiences of those who've come through the system, who understand the challenges, and those who are in a position to make changes around that, some of the challenges and around the cultures. And again, I would say internationally, there's significant research and evidence on what is the impact of diversifying political representation. What is the impact of having more women in national and local government? And increasingly, it points to the positive, so that there are more laws to promote equality. There's a greater participation of women in the workforce. There's more attention to healthcare, to welfare, to education. More benefit for women, children and families in general, and other aspects addressing violence, for example, and just that greater responsiveness to citizen needs. So I think we have to be really mindful of ensuring that our local government systems and national government system is actually creating the space and the culture of inclusivity that dismantles some of the barriers and really creates the opportunity for changing our culture. I think also research has shown that the type of political system we create and the type of representation really says a lot about the type of society that we want to live in. So if we were to just correlate that and say, you know, if we have a diverse government system at local and national level that is reflective of the society, then that says in itself that we actually want to live in an inclusive society.
Okay. Helen, I'll give the final word to you. It's taking place in the Menlo Park across from us there tomorrow morning between 10:30 and 2:00. If people want to get involved and attend, how do they do that?
Well, if they want to get involved, they can send us an email to saleconnect@gmail.com, or even if they come to the venue on the day, that's tomorrow from 10:30, we would see if we still have numbers to accommodate them. And it's a free symposium. And I want to say a very big thank you to Galway City Council as well, and the Department of Housing, Local Government and Integration for making it possible for us to have this symposium. And just everyone is welcome. And thank you to all the guest speakers as well, and to my committee as well.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Helen Ogbo, the coordinator of Sale Connect and also a Labour candidate for Galway City East, Kathleen Loch, and Dr. Helen Maher, the VP of Equality, Diversity and Inclusion at the University of Galway. Thank you all for joining us on Galway Talks. Coming up next, we have a musical performance from Death Milkshake. And all I can say to ye is strap yourselves in for this one. Welcome back into today's programme. Did I say we have some live music in studio? Because I'm joined across me now by Death Milkshake. Here is Shiny Thing from his new EP releasing tomorrow, Shiny Things. Well done, Death Milkshake. That is Shiny Thing from their new EP. Shiny Thing is coming out tomorrow. And I'm sitting across me now is Wes from Death Milkshake. Wes, very good morning. Thank you for joining us here in Galway Bay FM.
Thank you very much for having me.
First of all, I was looking at you there and you were pressing buttons. Is there synthesizers? There's a guitar or bass and there's lots of buttons going. Tell me about the live looping aspect of it, first of all, because I was in a trance watching you there.
Yeah, so basically it's a one-man band type setup. I have synthesizer going. I've got vocals going through a fair few effects. I have MIDI drums, which I'm playing on finger pads. And then there's guitar and bass tones, both being played through a bass guitar. And I've got a little guitar amp modelling and effects unit down below there. And that gives me all the different guitar sounds.
Because a lot of people know the live looping from Ed Sheeran. You kind of have it to have a very clean cut on all the different pieces so they all line up nicely.
Yeah.
How did you get into that?
Well, basically, I spent a lot of time in Australia and came back to Ireland only about 5 years ago. When I came back, it was a thing of trying to start a band, and I was in Roscommon, and the type of band I wanted to start was more along the psych rock, prog rock sort of stuff. I couldn't really find people who wanted to make that type of music, so I was like, I have to do something on my own. And then I learned about Ableton and how it could be used as a live looper and how I could create songs that were, I guess, a little more complex than what Ed Sheeran is doing. Do you know what I mean? To make the songs a little bit more interesting and have different instruments in them.
Yeah.
So it's really only because nobody wants to play prog rock in Roscommon.
Yeah, but I must say I was mesmerised from you because the synthesizers and you're running back and forth and playing different things and twisting different things. It was something to behold. And are you self-taught?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm mainly a bass player. Previous bands I've played in have always been bass, maybe a little bit of guitar here and there, but I only really started learning keys when I started this project. I don't consider myself a very good singer, but, you know, I do what I can, and there's amazing effects out there these days which can make your voice sound acceptable. Well,
I think it works for that type of music, though.
Yeah, it probably does, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the vocal isn't... I'm not singing ballads. The vocal is just an instrument like any of the others, so it's not been given more importance like it would in a lot of genres of music.
I think something like that now would be good for electric at 2 o'clock in the morning. They might get good enjoyment out of that.
Exactly.
But talk to me, you said there's not many people there to actually play along, and that's how you got into this side of thing. In terms of getting help producing this EP that's coming out tomorrow, Shiny Things, who have you been working with?
So I've been working with Dahi, who you might know, he's a producer from Clare. Mm-hmm. He's had a couple of albums out, and I actually met Dahi originally when I was starting to get into using Ableton, and he ran an Ableton workshop down at... I think it was called Hedge School, a little festival down in Doolin. And I met him down there. I learned a good few things at that weekend. And when it came, I was sharing my music with him, what I was working on and stuff. And when it came time to actually produce the EP, I was like, look, would you like to work on it with me? And yeah, he was up for it. So there it is.
And Shiny Thing is one of six songs on the EP Shiny Things out tomorrow. What are the other songs?
So we've had two other singles. So Shiny Thing was the first single. There's been Algorithm and Megaphone, and there'll be three songs that people haven't heard at all before, unless they've been to my gigs previously, because I have played a couple of them.
And now I'm calling you Wes just to make it easier for myself this morning, but Death Milkshake, where does that come from?
It was just a name. I just think it's a good name. I came up with that name long before this project.
Okay.
I think I've had that name going around in my head for 10 years. And I may even have released some like acoustic music under that name before.
But you haven't made a milkshake out of rotten eggs or anything like
no,
that?
No, so. I haven't. No. I just think the two words just sound great together.
Yeah, it's definitely original, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
And in terms of gigs coming up, I know you've a big one coming up in Roscommon this weekend.
Yeah, so I've got my EP launch on Saturday, that's in Edmundstown House, just outside Balladreen, which used to be the bishop's residence for the diocese.
I don't think the bishop will be playing that type of music now.
No, I think this will be a first for that house. But The bishop, whoever the bishop was at the time, moved out of there 5 years ago, and it's owned privately now. And I know the guy who owns the place, and he runs like theatre gigs and some comedy stuff and that. So when I wanted to do an EP launch and I wanted to do something locally, that's where I live. So I asked him and he was up for it. So it's going to be a good night.
And in terms of other gigs coming up in the next few weeks?
So it'll be probably into the summer before I'm gigging again. There's a couple of festivals on the horizon. There's Night and Day up in Boyle, Night and Day Festival, which I played 2 years ago as well. And also Livestock, which is in, I believe, Ockram, mm-hmm. out near Ballinasloe, Ballinasloe, Loughrea sort of direction.
And I know I might have actually met you a few years ago from your other line of work, because you do a sort of Airbnb business on the side.
I do. It's a glamping site that we have up in Roscommon in Ballardrine called Willowbrook Glamping and Hideaways. So we'll get the plug in there, will we?
We will, I think. I must say it's a beautiful facility. You're in there in a little boring, and you have a fresh water jacuzzi is the thing I remember from
we
it.
Do,
but
yeah.
just give us a sense of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, that's kind of the reason we came back from Australia. So that was my wife's parents' place before, mm-hmm. and they were getting to retirement age, needed someone to take it over. So the opportunity came up and we went with it and decided to convert it to glamping, because that's kind of, you know, the in thing, I guess, at the time and still probably at the moment. So we're just slowly building it. We'll be adding some more units and stuff this year, hopefully. So it takes up a lot more of my time than the music, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely. And because I've been there and I've seen it in action, it's fairly hands-on there.
It is, yeah.
How do you find the business at the moment?
Grand. Like, post-COVID was difficult for a year or so, because nobody wanted to holiday in Ireland. They were sick of it after 2 years of it. Look, it's slowly building every year since then. Seems to be give it a little bit of a lift, so okay. We'll keep at it anyway.
Well, it's Death Milkshake and the new EP is Shiny Things, being released tomorrow. Where's the best place for people to download and stream it?
So Bandcamp, if you're into streaming. I'm not putting it all on Spotify and the other streamers just yet, mm-hmm. because, well, you know, obvious reasons.
Financial reasons.
Yeah. If they're not going to pay.
That's
but terrible. Look, all the songs will end up there eventually, but if someone wants to stream it tomorrow, Bandcamp is the place. And also I have a website, www.deathmilkshake.com, and it can be purchased from there as a download or as a physical CD.
And are you finding good uptake on it? It's a fairly niche genre.
It is, yeah. I mean, I'm finding good uptake from festivals and stuff. I've had a bit of luck getting festival dates and that, and it is that type of music.
Yeah.
But like with music these days, it's so competitive, and the likes of Spotify and the rest of them have made it so that in people's heads, music has no value. Mm. So it is difficult that way for sure, but... I'm in it for the love of it more than anything else, that's for sure. I wouldn't be in this for making money, because it'd be pretty foolish.
Absolutely. And now finally the EP launch in Edmundstown House. Just if people want to go to that, what are the details for that?
So again, you'll find the details for that on deathmilkshake.com. Just go to shows in there. It's on Saturday the 20th. It starts at 9 p.m. and if anyone in Balladrine is listening, there's a bus from Spells Bar and back, so that's just to make it handy for people to get out there, because it's about a 5 minute drive from town. Yeah. And you might want to have a drink, so.
And good spot as well. Wes, aka Death Milkshake, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thank you.